Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California. And your brain masseur, get ready for your brain massage. Now I'm going to change up the format a little for this show. Rather than running through my outline of what I consider key news stories for the week and then going through them, I'm simply going to see what I have to say about each one, if I even get to those. And then I want to finish up on my look at the New York Times definitive list of evidence that Trump is racist. Let's get started.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
More than 350 dead in Sri Lanka. MSM silent. 50 killed in New Zealand mosque shooting. 24/7 coverage. Difference? The 350 killed in Sri Lanka were identifiable as Christians killed by Muslims, while the 50 killed in New Zealand were Muslims killed by a whacked-out self-proclaimed racist who promoted socialism, and the MSM tried but failed to brand the attacker as a right-wing, right, which is a liberal's code word for Christian. When the attack on the mosque was reported, Hillary and Obama expressed deep sadness that peaceful Muslims would be attacked while worshiping. When the Sri Lanka massacre of 350 Catholics and other Christians was reported, Obama and Hillary tweeted condolences to the Easter worshipers. Now, who worships Easter? In Nigeria, Muslims routinely slaughter Christians, and the American MSM turn a blind eye or roll their eyes and yawn while they look away. April 24, only a few days ago, we paused to remember the Armenian and Assyrian Christians who were slaughtered by Muslims during the World War I. Over 1.5 million Armenians and 300,000 Assyrians were killed, and it was, as Churchill said, because they were considered by the Muslims to be Christians who don't deserve to live, you know. Yeah, Churchill got most things right, by the way, observed that World War I provided an opportunity, cover, for the Muslim Turks to clear Turkish soil of a Christian race. It was genocide, friend, religious-based genocide. When unrest breaks out in any Muslim country, Christians are specifically targeted, have you noticed? The point is, all the other factors, tribal feuds, territory disputes, political factions vying for power, at the root of it all, there is a religious ideology that believes infidels have no rights, no legitimate claim to life or liberty. They have three choices. They can pay the jizya, which means they can agree to live under Muslim rule, under Sharia law, and pay a tax for the privilege. Or they can convert to Islam, or die. You see, there's no peace without Islam. The word means submission to Allah and to his prophet. 20% of Muslims in the United States believe this. Yeah, that infidels have no legitimate right to life or liberty because they have refused to submit, that is, to Islam, to their God named Allah. Despite the Pope's efforts to make it out that Allah and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are the same, they're not. And the other 80% of peace, and by the way, how's that working out for you over there in Sri Lanka? And the other 80% of peace-loving Muslims in the country are for the most part silent on the matter. Yeah, only a small handful actually speak up, and they do so very carefully. Because if you think the Muslim ideology is harsh against the infidel, it's even worse for the apostate, in their view, someone who leaves Islam. And in Islam, it doesn't take much to be branded an apostate, you know. I mean, if you say something that sounds like you doubt the Muslim religion, you can be branded an apostate. Bridget Gabriel has been very vocal about the truth concerning Muslim religion and the desire of every true Muslim to bring America under Sharia law. Bill Mayer seems to get it. He knows the fundamental beliefs of Islam are incompatible with what he called liberal values of free speech, freedom of religion, and he's willing to say it out loud in front of the God he doesn't believe in and everybody. He included marriage equality with gender equity, I should throw that in there, which we would certainly list with liberal values, but not our own. And yet, Mayer also knows that Christians don't kill you if you leave their religion or disagree with him about gender equity and marriage equality. You see? He understands the difference. The Christians aren't trying to kill you if you leave your their religion or refuse to join theirs. Christians don't believe that all non-believers must convert to Christianity or die. Now, the Catholics did that a while back, but you know that's not our thing, and that's not Christian doctrine. Even Mayer knows that while Christians object and flat out reject the idea of homosexual marriage, they don't believe those who practice such behavior ought to be killed. We want them to be saved. Mayer knows that although Christians object to and reject the idea of gender fluidity as contrary to nature and to nature's God, which is self-evident, by the way, they don't call for the murder of any biological males who are so confused as to think they are girls or vice versa. Mayer sees that there is a difference at a very fundamental level between Muslim religion and Christianity, and I'm glad to see that. Christians are the only people who set up a country that affords everyone in it the inalienable right of freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, and so on. Secular states, by the way, don't do that. They don't believe in freedom of thought. The ugly truth is secular humanist states have a whole lot more in common with Islamic regimes than with Christian ideals, which might tell you why secularists don't mind Christians being slaughtered by Muslims, but feel great sympathy for Muslims being killed by, well, anyone, I guess. I mean, it's so bizarre. Remember when Obama could not bring himself to quote the famous line in the Declaration affirming that we are all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, but he kept leaving out the word Creator? When 50 Muslims were killed in an atrocious attack by socialist self-avowed racist, Hillary and her friend Obama decried the event, rightly so, and expressed personal identification with the victims, expressing how saddened they were that peace-loving Muslims were murdered while worshiping. And it is an atrocity, by the way. But when 350 Christians are slaughtered in Sri Lanka, Obama and Hillary can't bring themselves to use the word Christian. Instead, they refer to those murdered by the rampaging Muslims, an organized thing, by the way, launched on purpose on Easter. They refer to them as Easter worshipers. What in the world does that mean? Who worships Easter? I, for one, simply do not believe these people are as tone deaf as they sometimes appear or pretend to be. I think these guys are among the most rhetoric attuned people on the planet today. They display a heightened sensitivity to the weight of words and the nuances and so on. And they're attacking us with that all the time. They avoided using the word Christian on purpose because they are very sensitive to the implications, the message it sends. Muslims killing Christians. That creates an immediate disaffection for Muslims. And of course, it bolsters sympathy for Christians, and we can't have that. No way. I mean, their worldview, Christians are the problem, especially white ones. They're to be blamed for everything. Christians, the conservative ones, are in their way, obstacles in their effort to progress us toward or socialism, communism, whereas Muslim ideology is actually a useful ally against their common enemy. Increasingly, the world is polarizing with conservative, Bible-believing Christianity on the right and everything else on the left. My new book, God's War, is coming out soon, hardback, about 300 pages somewhere. We're not quite finished with that part of it all, the formatting. Smith-sewn, by the way, and that means when you're reading it, you don't have to fight the binding to get the book to lay down. It'll lay open for you. This book is a must-read for every God-fearing patriot. There is no book that explains what is going on in our country and in the world today as thoroughly, as clearly, and totally from a biblical perspective like God's War. That's coming out soon. If you want to reserve a first edition, signed copy of God's War, go to our website, brainmassage.net, and send me an email that says, just simply, reserve God's War, and then how many copies you want to reserve. When the book is released, I'll then send you a response to your email with a code that you can use to buy it at a 25% discount. And everyone using that code will get a signed copy. but that discount is only available to those who reserve their copy before the release date. Okay. What else do I need to touch on before I go to break? Biden declares his candidacy for president. That sounds like a punchline for a joke. Here's an NFL football player that decided to threaten a pro-lifer outside an abortion clinic in Huntsville, Alabama. Let's see, who is this bully? There it is. Austin Shepherd, currently a free agent. Played for Minnesota Vikings, I understand. Anyway, what a wonderful example of a role model this guy is. A bigoted bully who can't articulate a cogent argument for his position, so he decides he'll use his 6'4", 315-pound frame and menacing presence as an offensive tackle in the NFL to intimidate a woman expressing her well-articulated objection to murdering babies in the womb. It is consistent, isn't it? Over and over and over we get these stories. Here's a woman that attacked an elderly pro-life protester, knocking her down to the ground and breaking her leg. Time and again, it's a liberal that attacks a conservative physically, whether it's some guy kicking a pro-life mother, a liberal throwing an old woman down and breaking her leg because she handed someone a card with a number to call if they choose to discuss other options than abortion, or some liberal NFL football tackle threatening a woman at an abortion clinic who was wearing a sign that encourages women to seek other options, or some liberal nut job attacking somebody wearing a MAGA hat, or some liberal news network maligning teenagers because they were wearing MAGA hats, or some idiot school official suspending a student for wearing a MAGA sweatshirt and having their pictures taken holding a Trump banner, or, and you're beginning to understand perhaps why liberals have so much understanding for Muslims killing Christians, because they have the same spirit, the same aggressive, gonna hit you if I don't like you attitude, you know, that attack anyone who dares tell the truth about what's going on kind of thing. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back. Folks, remember, if you want to grow, and I mean really grow in your knowledge of the Word of God, you cannot find a better place than right here at Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria. Sunday morning at 9:30, I'm offering a comprehensive study of prophecy, and I mean comprehensive. Every prophetic passage in the Bible will be laid out for you, and you'll have a totally biblical knowledge of these subjects, so these yahoos can't jerk you around with their phony predictions anymore.
Go to SantaMariaLighthouse.org. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Scheibach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church bowery arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Okay, let's get back to work on my definitive proofs that Trump is not racist. I think I should begin by explaining that the burden of proof really isn't on Trump or his supporters to prove he isn't racist. That's a clever trick of the left, you know, to make outlandish accusations that set their opponent on the defensive, and then thereafter allowing the conversation to be totally controlled by the attacker. That's what they're doing with the trumped-up Russian collusion hype, you know. As long as they can keep Trump and company defending against their attack, well, they hope by that to keep Trump from turning the attack on them. We are hopeful this will turn around. Congress, now under the control of the Democrats, however, they're not going to make it easy for Barr and the rest of the team that wants to try to wring some justice out of the system. So anyway, it's actually not my job to prove Trump is not racist. Although Russell's teapot was contrived by Bertrand as a way to make Christians think they have to prove self-evident truths, which is nonsense. Yeah, such as that there is in fact a creator who endowed to every man certain inalienable rights. However, the point he made with that analogy is in fact itself self-evident. The mere assertion of a something doesn't make a something true. And the burden is upon the asserter, not the assertee. Those aren't words, but anyway, to prove or establish the credibility of the assertion is the responsibility of the one who's making it. And credit must be given where due, and some little bit at least is due the New York Times for bothering to make the effort to assemble proofs supporting the general liberal allegation, assumption really, that Trump is racist. And I've been using it to offer a rebuttal. Let's continue. We left off exposing the vapidity of those proofs offered under the heading that Trump regards minorities as uppity and ungrateful. The proof they offered was that he, quote, frequently criticizes prominent African Americans for being unpatriotic, ungrateful, and disrespectful, end quote. But every occasion in which Trump made such a criticism It was true. The person was behaving in a manner that was unpatriotic, ungrateful, and or disrespectful. Okay? In other words, Trump never said black people are unpatriotic by virtue of their skin color. He's never said brown people are disrespectful by virtue of their skin color or any such nonsense as that. But too many people are just so dumbed down today. These kinds of tactics are effective. Anyway, he has pointed to specific behavior and condemned it as unpatriotic, ungrateful, and disrespectful. And only the liberal looks at skin color in these situations and makes judgment about racism. Martin Luther King asked us all to make judgments based on the content of an individual's character and not on the color of their skin. So far, that's all Trump has been doing. And it is very refreshing, by the way, to have a president who is not tangled up in race issues in his thinking. He is able to speak to the character of a man without regard to the color of his skin. So, once again, I show that it's the liberal that's the racist here, not the conservative Christian, and not Trump. But before I leave this proof that liberals are the ones that are racist, have you been paying attention to Candace Owens? Diamond and Silk got this thing rolling a little while back, I think, and maybe it could go a little earlier than that. And they're great fun, and they make serious points in a very effective way. Owens, however, is straight up serious, and she's nailing the libs for their use and abuse of blacks in America. Consistently, she turns every one of their pat arguments around on them. She said black lives have never mattered to the Democrats. Black votes always have. She talked about them creating systems that have locked the black population, so many of the black families in, and they can't get out. You know, talking about welfare and everything, encouraging single motherhood. She brought out that in 1960, single motherhood among the black families was only 23%. Today, it's 74%. And she said they incentivize it, removing the black father from the home. She went on. They come around every 4 years, however, and say, vote for us because the other guy is racist, when the opposite is in fact true. Well, good for Candace, and God bless her. The Republican Party has never been the home of racism, my friend. The Democrat Party has always been the home of racism and the party of racists, and it's still that way today. So many of you have just been fooled. It's time to wake up. All right, back to this definitive list of proofs that Trump's a racist. Next heading in this article, published in the New York Times in 2018, friendliness with proud racists and white nationalists. And the first proffer of evidence to support that allegation is this, quote, he retweeted white nationalists without apology, end quote. Now, here's the problem with this. The article linked to this point in this article in New York Times actually begins by offering the caveat that Trump does this stuff out of ignorance. Let's start there, because this is fairly consistent with those who glob on to whatever they think supports their narrative and then run with it, even when their glob that they've taken hold of doesn't really support their narrative. This article begins by making a fair statement that Trump does sometimes retweet stuff irresponsibly. And this person who wrote the article suggests he's ignorant about the connection these tweets had to radical white supremacists or radical white nationalists. However, in typical liberal fashion, that same author, as he goes on down into the meat of his article, begins to suggest that Trump's retweet of some of these people actually supports the suggestion that he has sympathy for the movements they represent. And that, my friend, is a fallacy. I mean, in this show, earlier, I mentioned Bill Maher and complimented him on some astute and honest observations he made about the Muslim religion in contrast to Christianity. It is possible that I would have thought, hey, this Bill Maher guy is right on, if I didn't know better. You know, and I might have, in that case, quoted him without offering some clarification regarding his views, as I did. But actually, maybe that's not so possible, because, you know, the brain masseur is superior to people like Trump, right? And he would never make such a mistake. And, you know, that plucking sound you heard was me plucking my tongue from my cheek. And the sarcasm you noted in my tone was exactly that sarcasm, a useful device from time to time to make certain salient points, such as, give me a break here, please. You expect your president to be much more aware, even omniscient, and never to make such mistakes as seeing a tweet that made a statement he thought worthy to be retweeted, but didn't take the time to research who the person was and went ahead and went with it. I mean, the point is, this sort of thing does not prove Trump supports radical white nationalism or white supremacy. And when they say he does this without apology, it isn't enough for them that he does come back and openly clarify that he what he means by nationalism when he uses the term, and what he is, and that he is opposed to any notion of white supremacy. And what they want is for him to say, oh, I retweeted that one and I really should not have done that. Because they're a bunch of little babies, you know. I hope you see that while that might offend some folks, it doesn't prove he's a white nationalist or a supremacist. In fact, in Trump's world, he might hear someone call him a white nationalist, and he might think, well, I'm white. I do believe America's first. Kind of, I'm really into my nation here, you know. Unaware that there is a political party somewhere called by that name that promotes policies that he would, if he heard them, strongly disagree with. All right, anyway, the next proof. Quote, he called some of those who marched alongside white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia, last August, quote, very fine people, end quote. Another example of reaching so far, these guys are going to pull their arms out of their sockets. Did you notice? They did carefully, I mean, this article did carefully distinguish that Trump did not say white supremacists were very fine people. No, he called some of those who marched alongside white supremacists very fine people. You see? And this is the trick of these devils. They're adept at deceptive speech. Probably most who heard it or read their little note here, in their mind would register the idea that Trump said white supremacists were very fine people. In fact, that isn't what they said. But that's what gets reported. In the echo chamber of the MSM and in the liberal universe, it's repeated over and over and over again. Lately by Biden, when he perpetrated the lie that Trump referred to white supremacists as very fine people. I hope you're paying attention and you see what these people do. You should really feel nothing but loathing for them and all others who do this kind of thing routinely. The truth is, Trump did not say white supremacists were very fine people. And the writer of the article used by the New York Times to prove that he did actually made it clear that is not what Trump did. What he said was that there were very fine people on both sides of this conflict at that march. And that is the truth. And again, this is the most truthful president I think we've ever had, ranking him right up there with Reagan. It was an honest observation that needed to be given consideration when assessing what happened here in that situation. Sometimes I attend rallies and marches, and usually it would be a pro-life rally or march or something like that. And it is inevitable that some groups will join themselves to the march. And sometimes people sponsor the march that I don't particularly agree with theologically and so on. And there will be people there that I don't agree with at all. I'm there to stand for life. I'm not there to stand in solidarity with every group representative that shows up at the rally. Not everyone that marched in Charlottesville was a white supremacist or Antifa. Some were there because they felt strongly the statue ought to come down, and others were there who felt strongly that it ought not to be brought down. And these people were, in all other respects, respectable. The white supremacists and the Antifa activists took advantage of a political hot-button issue in order to advance their respective agendas. But our specific interest here is, in what way does this provide proof that Trump is sympathetic to white racism? Trump came out against, quote, he said, hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides, end quote. But because he didn't come out on their side, you see what happens? Ironically, it's the left that distorts what happened. Both sides perpetrated acts of hatred, bigotry, and violence. By some accounts, Antifa instigated the physical side of that whole conflict. And by other accounts, the white supremacists instigated the breakout of that event into physical violence. But the left will never mention that Antifa started anything. So does that mean Biden's statement shows sympathy for Antifa? I mean, it's all like the Muslims were killed in New Zealand, but it was Easter worshippers in Sri Lanka. You know, I'm sure that the very fine people that were caught up in that atrocity appreciated being distinguished from the white supremacists and Antifa counter-protesters at that march. Okay, next proof under the heading friendliness with proud racists and white nationalists. Quote, after David Duke, the former leader of the Ku Klux Klan, endorsed him, Trump was reluctant to disavow Duke even when asked directly on television. End quote. Okay. Now, I watched the clip. It's linked here in my notes. You can get them online through our website. Trump said he would be glad to condemn any group he felt was deserving of it. Please send him a list of the groups and he would have research done and then offer formal condemnation where warranted. He said he did not know David Duke or anything about white supremacist groups. That makes sense to me, by the way, even if it doesn't make sense to you. The guy has been busy building his business, or businesses, I should say. You know, building buildings, doing this, that. You know, the Apprentice Show, selling his shirts, his ties, and you know what I mean? It can be time-consuming to build a multi-billion-dollar business, if you know what I mean. So, okay. He's really never looked into white supremacy or David Duke. It's just not a name that has come up along the way. And I had never heard of Saul Alinsky, for example, until really not too long ago. And yet that guy, I learned, is the very fountain of the evil we're dealing with in our country today. So how did I go so long without hearing that name? I don't know why these people don't take Trump up on these offers he puts out there. He said, send me a list. I'll research it. I'll get back to you. I'll make your denunciations if you want them, you know. But here's why it all breaks down for the liberals and why they don't bother doing that. Because it isn't the point. They press Trump to openly disavow Duke, which, by the way, means, as a matter of fact, that I deny any responsibility or support for him. And they wanted Trump to say he would refuse to accept the endorsement or the support of Duke, so they wanted to alienate him between him and his some potential voters. Trump says, I'm not going to say that to anyone supporting me when I know little, if anything, about them. While these same liberals cozy up to Farrakhan and make statements like Pol Pot is one of their favorite leaders or pros Ho Chi Minh. You see what I mean? So when New York Times publishes the definitive list proving liberals are dictator-loving, mass murderer-loving communists, well, maybe we'll have something to talk about. Because that, my friend, is a whole lot nearer to the truth than this tripe about Trump being racist. Okay, I'm sure it's becoming more and more clear to you. And thank God for the help we're getting from people like Alan West and Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk and so many others. I'm hopeful. It's just that we'd better pray and fast and pray and fast and pray because the election's coming up soon and we don't want voter fraud to decide this thing. And man, that's a big problem. So pray and so on. Get my book, God's War. It'll help give you some insight into the right way to approach all of this stuff and particularly the upcoming election. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you call and let me know you see they're on. Lights on if you agree. Lights off if you disagree. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. That number is 805-314-2114. Or go to our website, brainmassage.net, and send me an email. Remember, if you want to reserve a copy of God's War, just write reserve a copy. Tell me how many copies you want me to reserve. And then when the book's released, I'll send you an email with a code that will allow you to buy it with a 25% discount. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church. Folks, remember, if you want to grow, and I mean really grow in your knowledge of the Word of God, you cannot find a better place than right here at Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria. Sunday morning at 9:30, I'm offering a comprehensive study of prophecy, and I mean comprehensive. Every prophetic passage in the Bible will be laid out for you, and you'll have a totally biblical knowledge of these subjects. So these yahoos can't jerk you around with their phony predictions anymore.
Go to SantaMariaLighthouse.org.
Is going to church for you like walking on a treadmill? You keep going and going and getting nowhere? Have you and your family really grown closer to the Lord Jesus? Are you being challenged to grow in His grace? Or are you allowed to hide your lack of spiritual growth under the cover of so-called grace? Come to the church that makes a difference. Lighthouse Baptist Church, guiding families through the moral storms of our day.